The Production Expert Podcast is brought to you with the kind support of Arturia, Avid, Source Elements, and RSBE Audio Solutions.
Welcome to the Production Expert Podcast. I'm Julian Rogers, and in this week's edition, I'm joined by Shaya and Graham Kirkman. And we're going to be discussing gear and software that we can't live without. This is basically just like chatting about gear, isn't it? I mean, it's, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this will be reasonably easy. While I give myself time to think about what I'm going to say, because I haven't thought about it yet. Graham, why don't you tell us about some gear that you can't live without? Start us off.
Gear that I can't live without. Okay, so plug-in wise, genuinely, I really had to think about this because gear that I literally couldn't live without now, Sound Radix or Orline Post 2.
Okay. I mean, straight away, I was just thinking I should, for anyone who isn't familiar with your work, I should have said, hey, he's a post guy, but I think you've just announced yourself quite loudly by saying post, Autoline Post. It's like, tell us about Autoline Post though, go on.
Well, it's just almost faultless at getting those, like the programs I get a lot of double mic stuff, or even worse is those kind of like Coach Trip or something. And there's like at the start, especially before anyone's been voted off, there's 14 mics going about, do you know what I mean? And they're all out of sync with each other. Every single
right, yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah, that is chaos.
Might only
be
milliseconds, but it's enough that when you turn them all up, so when you listen to the editor's guide, it's just like this phase noise. You're like,
well, that's
okay.
But you make a good point though, Graham. Just because, like, I mean, you said it's only milliseconds, but that's where it counts. If they're if they're miles away, then they're well out of each other's way, and it will sound stupid. But they won't actually cancel. They won't do that nonsense.
I know, and I was trying to think, how did I go about, because I've mixed these kind of programs for years. I was thinking, how did I do it before? And do you know what? I can't remember. But I think what I used to do was have to be more fussy about who I picked as a mic, but then also cut out all the other guys around them, and you'd end up with like a jigsaw, really track lead sort of jigsaw thing, and it would work fine, but it took forever. And nowadays we get more and more and more mics given to us with less and less and less time to do it, and it just gets ridiculous. So you just stick it, just, you know, go and make a cup of coffee, get the scene and find the mic that's the most prevalent through that, auto-align them, done. And it's so quick. It's just like, you know, done. Okay, mix. And very rarely, I don't use it in dynamic mode ever, because I find I get slippages and weird, occasionally things that go wrong. So I always use it in the static mode, and it works 99% of the time for me. And
can you remember how long it took you to do that manually or estimate? Because I can imagine it was...
I can't, because it would never be a separate pass of a thing for me. It would just be, I kind of still do it the same way now. I would treat it as a scene. I'd find the end of the scene, whatever that may be, whatever I call a scene. And then I would just do it as I went, because I don't track lay like most people track lay. I mix as I go. So when you get a track lay from me, it's mixed. It's not all at 0 dB sort of things. Just the way I've always worked. So I find it quicker and easier. So I sort of do it as I go. So I can't really work out what it took, but it's certainly longer than just pressing that and going, match, done.
Yeah.
Here we go. And now I can mix. I still do the same sort of thing. I still cut things out and blah, blah, blah. But I think that's more habit. But it doesn't have to make it easier when you just pull up two faders together and it's in sync. You're like, wow. It's like magic, that plugin.
It's the dullest product to to create content for if you've got a website that you need to, you know what I mean? Because it's like Autoline Post, okay, click done, right, okay.
Yeah, I know. There's not exactly. There's no. Yeah,
but,
I guess.
But from someone who wants to use it rather than talk about it, this is not a criticism. I mean, this is what I'm getting from you. It's like you had a problem that at your day and it's gone. You're like the accountant looking at the first spreadsheet when it was shown on the Apple II in 1970 something, you know?
Exactly. No, it's not an exciting plugin, is it? It's not going to win any awards for that, but as a dialogue editor, it's one of those ones, it's one of those ones you can't live without.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really useful.
It's a good first, put it this way, it fulfills the brief.
So, yeah,
but I can definitely see how. I mean, I don't know. It would be fun. I'm not asking you to do it now, but it would be fun to kind of try to calculate how much time you've got back from that from the invention of that plugin. But actually,
Show dependent, isn't it? Show dependent, because on something like Coach Trip, for instance, which I did recently or whenever it was the last series of it, it's hours. It's hours.
Yeah,
because there's 8, 10 contestants, two presenter or whatever. There's one presenter,
yeah,
then there's doubled up mics of other stuff that you didn't know what it is, but you still have to look at it. But the time you get to the final, it's less time you save because there's only two contestants and what. So,
oh,
do you know
I suppose
what I mean?
So, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
You save less time, but I still run it all through. So depending on the show, but I now run it on nearly everything I get. Almost the first thing I do, if there's two mics of one, which these days you don't get much of it, do you? The editor just gives you one. But when you do get two, you'll always get a bit of phasing, one a boom and a clip or something. You run it through that, bang in sync.
It's supposed to be really good for drums as well, for those that sort of record, you know, live drums with a lot of mics and stuff.
Are you talking about Auto Align Post here or Auto Align?
No, I'm talking about Auto Align too. Now I think
you're
about
not the first person to do that, but yeah, totally. It's like difference is in terms of kind of what they do, because they're very much related. Auto Align 2 has borrowed some of the stuff that was developed during the creation of Auto Align Post. Mm-hmm. You compare two to the original Auto Align, they're very different beasts. But the thing about them is just about whether or not the things are moving or not. That's all it is. But apart from that, it's the same job.
Yeah.
Amazing. And Auto Align 2, that's...
I mean, I'm dying for an opportunity to use it, right? But I just don't, because I don't record, you know, live drums in general. I just use samples and, you know, record one guitar, so I don't really get a chance to use it, but it is a very cool piece of software, to be honest.
Well, I mean, but then again, I mean, if you're recording guitar, if you're recording acoustic guitars, this is quite a good example of a moving source, just because, I mean, there's a lot of the reason why lots of people favour coincident miking techniques if they're using more than one mic on an acoustic guitar is because when people play the guitar, they tend to move. And you can hear that stuff. I say loads about kind of my worst case scenario for this, and I've done quite a lot of this actually. Because is accordion. I used to know someone who's a great accordion player. I mean, accordion gets a hard time, but like any instrument played well is a good thing, you know. And the thing about it is the two bits that make a noise move relative to each other. And if that person's standing up and then sort of swaying at the same time, you've got complex movement. Stick up a space pair. It's like, yeah. It's all over the place. So.
Ever wondered what it's like to mix an entire album for Kanye? Or layering vocals for Chris Brown? Join your hosts, Cash and G, every fortnight as we sit down with some of your favourite artists, producers and engineers to talk everything music. Brought to you by Avid Pro Tools.
That sounds great.
We should go on to a number two and go to a show for that. What's the first thing that you want to...
I mean, this is definitely something I can't live without now, which is Celimony Melodyne or any kind of manual tuning software, right? Because my opinion is nearly all music these days has been tuned either, you know, within an inch of its life or, you know, at least a sort of a perfection. And I use Melodyne for controlling performance, for timing, adjusting vibrato, breath control, sibilance, all those things. And it's really a fantastic tool. And you can get really natural results as well. Obviously, you know, if you adjust it too much, you can get some sort of subtle artifacts. But I don't know what I would do without it because every single track that I work on, I'm using Melodyne on a vocal. And there's sort of an argument for, you know, oh, well, you know, you don't need to use Melodyne, you don't need to tune. If the musician or vocalist performs better, then no one would need it. But I just think that the standards that we've got in our industry these days is beyond, you know, great performance of what it would be 20 years ago, even, you know. So, I think these days, manual tuning software is something I definitely can't live without. But Graham, I don't know if you... Do you have much experience with tuning, that sort of thing? Or you're...
No,
more of a post
but
guy,
I
right?
used Melodyne for the first time ever in my life last week.
Oh, really?
So that, yeah, because I don't do music, but I had... Only because it's now sort of built into Pro Tools. I would never have ever have used it before. And I didn't know what I was doing. I had no clue, but I got what I needed out of it. Because I'd never seen it or I knew about it. And I had to... They wanted me to change what the voiceover said, and it worked editorially, as in you could edit it together, it sounded right, but he went up at the end of the sentence, or I can't remember now, but it sounded like fake, the ending, because I had to put the middle into the end, and I thought, oh, I wonder if Melodyne will do something, so I stuck it on, it came up, I went, okay, I don't know what any of that means, dragged it down, and it just worked. I mean, I could never redo it, but it's made me realise I should, and I will, learn Melodyne, and it'll be more useful, especially for things like changing inflection and voiceover and stuff. It really worked, a treat.
It's really incredible, and you can do it with guitars as well and keys in polyphonic mode. But yeah, it's just great. I don't know what I'd do without it. And I think just throwing an auto tune or something is it doesn't do the trick. And you can get it to sound really natural. It depends how much, you know, how much you get into it. But yeah, I don't think it can ruin a vocal at all if it's done well. Personally, Julian, do you have any experience with Melodyne?
I'm not somebody who enjoys tuning products. I have to say, since I've used AutoTune. I've tried the Revoice Pro and those things, and also Melodyne a long time, then came back to it with the ARA integration into Pro Tools. I'm sold on the ARA workflow. I'd really like it if it became available with some further products, particularly because I really want to get to grips with Re-Pitch, because I think from my experience, which isn't comprehensive, but you know, I've heard these things and tried them on, you know, tried them all on various things. It just seems to be the one that sounds the best. So Re-Pitch is definitely one that I'd like to try. I have to say, I am still one of those people who avoids tuning. It's not something that I have any great desire to spend my time doing. And the tools are way better designed than they used to be, and they sound loads better than they used to be, but it's just not something I actually want to spend my time doing. I wrote a piece this year about how, having used ChatGPT and understanding the chat interface and going, I want a tuning product that I can talk to like this, rather than have to make it do it, to be able to
see, that would be so cool.
Yeah, and just to be able to go, no, still sounds a little bit, you know. I don't know how you'd spell, but you know, and just being able to talk to it like I would do somebody next to me who was doing the tuning for me, because that's what I want. Because I've got, it's that whole idea about if we've got assistant software, we want it to help us do the stuff we don't want to do, not the stuff that we do. And I don't want to do tuning.
Well, let's put it this way. I find it really boring, but it needs to be done. I tend to do, if it's a really important lead vocal, I do it myself. If it's backing vocals or something that's less important, I have a guy that seems to love doing like really menial tasks, so I send it to him. I don't know why, but he loves it.
So the first one I'm going to do is a category rather than a model, but I still stand by it. It's open back headphones. I work on headphones a lot, but I hate closed back headphones. And I've got some really nice closed back headphones, but open back headphones I'm just comfortable in. And as long as they're physically comfortable enough, to be honest, I kind of forget that I'm wearing them. I do, you know, that thing when someone walks away with headphones on, they're still plugged in and they get that.
Yeah.
I do that a lot. So, and it's, it's just one of those things. I did for years have a pair of pretty cheap Sennheiser open back headphones that were so comfortable. I'd keep them on all day. I'd just forget. They were light as a feather.
Like an old pair of slippers.
Exactly. They were great.
Not on your head, obviously.
But the problem was that they, I mean, ultimately, yeah, the sound of them wasn't as good as it could have been. And I really came to notice it. I really honed in on a thing, particularly on my own voice, and it picked out a particular area of my voice that was just a little bit kind of resonant and unpleasant. And I just really noticed it more and more over time. And that's what prompted me to upgrade to the headphones I'm wearing now, which I'm going to have to take off to read the model number on because I can't remember. They're Austrian Audio Hi-X 65s, which are great. I saw these at NAMM in 2019, possibly. And it wasn't the open back ones, it was the closed back ones. But the construction of them, I picked them up and I went, those are really good. And I just liked everything about the construction, but they were closed back. I left them alone. I've got a pair of Neumanns, the Neumann NHD, are they the 30s possibly, or 20s? That's what they are. They're the closed back ones, expensive headphones. Mm. And I got those thinking, oh, these will be great. They've got some, they isolate really well. They're great for kind of keeping noise out and keeping noise in. Brilliant pair of tracking headphones. Definitely, if I'm recording, I give those to the drummer because, like, they actually keep the drums out, that kind of thing. But they're not comfortable, and I've still got that sensation of having a couple of, like, sealed cavities over my ears, and I don't enjoy it. So open-back headphones, I use them so much. And, I mean, these, you know, sonically, they're a total upgrade to those. And they should be, because they're considerably more expensive than those Sennheisers. Those Sennheiser do make really nice sounding open mic headphones if you pay for the good ones, but these weren't particularly expensive. But yeah, that's something that I totally cannot live without. Even to the point of view of having set up on my Redfall Pre, which is mounted underneath the tabletop, of my standing desk, I've got the two headphone outputs, and I have them set up for different things, so that I can very quickly change the mix I'm hearing out of my Redfall Pre just by changing sockets, and just quickly, you know, it's quicker than, you know. But yeah, there's something that I engage with constantly, and
And that's purely a comfort thing.
No, right? It's not comfort. I mean, these Austrian Audios aren't as comfortable as those Sennheisers were. Those Sennheisers were incredible in terms of comfort, but they sound better. It's about how they sound, and the fact that, I mean, I've never come across a pair of closed back headphones that haven't sounded congested and a bit sort of just kind of nasty, nasally, mid-rangey something. And I don't know if I'm inventing it because I've got the sensation of having sealed cups over my ears, or whether or not it's actually there, but I certainly experience it.
Yeah.
And that just isn't there with an open-back headphone. And also, you just feel like you're, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to keep any noise out in the room. I'm just trying to get some, you know, and I've got no problem. I mean, I do them all the time when I'm recording. I'm right in front of a dynamic mic. It's not the most sensitive mic in the world. But this idea that you need to keep, the sound in your headphones out of the mic. Well, it depends what's coming out of your headphones. You know, and if there's a click track blaring out, yeah, sure, you do. But like in a situation like this, it's not a problem, you know. I mean, if you isolate and listen to my voiceover on this podcast, then you'll be able to hear a little bit of both of you speaking. But because that's very unlikely to not be masked by you actually speaking, it's seriously not a problem.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've listen to your vocals for the podcast, and they sound pretty clean. So
Exactly. So yeah, that's great. And you know, if and I feel connected to the room and what's going on around me. The only thing is, if I've left my monitors on and I'm blaring out the monitors as well. To be honest,
you
don't
realize.
Really notice. I think we've all done that, haven't we? Yeah. You take your headphones off and go, oh damn, that's not right.
Yep, I sure have.
Anyway, open back headphones. That's my first one.
Auturia has a wide selection of software effects, including 3 compressors, 3 filters, 3 preamps, and 3 delays you'll actually use. The latest release, 3 delays you'll actually use, includes Delay Tape 201, Delay Memory Brigade, and the unique and experimental Delay Eternity. A bundle of selected effects, called the AudioFuse Creative Suite, is included with all AudioFuse audio interfaces. Visit Auturia.com to find out more on the effects you'll actually use.
We should go back to Graham, though. Yeah, Graham, what's your number two thing?
Well, my number two thing is another plugin, but it's the last plugins on the list. I didn't just want to do plugins. But this is another plugin that, again, you guys probably don't own as musicians and never need, but maybe you do. Cargo Cult's Matchbox.
I've heard of that, but I don't know what it is.
Like a conformance software where it can take... Where if you don't get an EDL from the editor, for instance, or you do and it's just rubbish, which are most of the ones I get, you can put the picture in, it'll try and match the pictures from old and new, it'll make an EDL from it, but you can put in the AFs, you can put in, old and new AFs, you can put in old and new guide tracks, either separately or together. I mean, the best thing is to try and throw them all in together and it'll come out with the best matchup for you, and it's just saves so much time than literally doing it by eye, like the old way. Be like, oh, sure, I've seen that shot in the other show somewhere. Here we go, scroll. Oh, God.
Saving time is a big deal for you then, Graham.
True. The first two plugins are time savers, aren't they? And they're the ones that I couldn't live without, so yeah.
That does kind of make sense, though. Come on, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose. I never thought of it that way, but you're right. That is what they are. Cargo Cut Matchbox is brilliant.
There's a philosophical point here, or practical, actually, not philosophical at all. I'm just thinking, if you've got, something like auto-align post, or this, actually, these jobs used to take a long time to do before these alternatives existed. So in that case, that was reflected in expectations around the work. So if you had all this stuff to do, people, you know, people understood, hopefully, that kind of like, yeah, there's a job to do and it's a job that takes a long time. As soon as there's a tool around to do it quickly, presumably there's a very short period before words got around that this thing exists, and then suddenly expectations shift to catch up.
Mm. And you can't continue working.
Yeah, yeah. Is that happening with what you're doing? So in that case, whereas you may have had a morning to sort out all of that nonsense between all those mics all doing different stuff. Now it's like, well, you know, that's going to take the time it takes to make a coffee.
The trouble is, that has happened, and it does happen, but it's happened. It's gone too far. So clients, especially clients, my clients who aren't technical, which is most of them, to be fair, expect even more. So there'll be an absolutely dreadfully recorded, I don't know, whatever, dialogue, really badly edited, because the editors now have less time to edit as well. So in the old days when the editor would have a final day of audio cleanup, that's all gone. So now there's no audio cleanup, and you just get dialogue on track one, a bit of voiceover on track two, a bit of music on track three.
Yeah, right.
What?
Bit of lucky dip assets.
Oh, track seven. And it's just, so sorting out the AF can take ages, you know, quite a while. That's never accounted for anymore. But unfortunately, I get a lot of clients saying things like, you know, things will sound this or do that, and they'll go, "Can't you just? Haven't you just got a plugin that does that?" And you're like, "That hasn't been invented yet."
Yeah.
So, and you get that a lot. So now they expect, why does it not sound like a drama? Really, really? But there must be a plugin, the drama plugin. No. So it's become, I think clients just think AI does everything in our job now, and we just, I don't know what we do, listen to it and make sure it's all right.
I don't want to say inevitably, because hopefully it won't be like that, but if there's confidence that further down the chain there's an easy way to fix this, then stuff that leaving one stage of production process, going to the next when it isn't really in a fit state to do it. We talked about this with restoration software, and just kind of like, okay, yeah, DX Revive is awesome, but still, at least try to do it right.
Yeah, it's with that kind of software where the clients who aren't, I have to emphasize, clients who aren't technically, I mean, why should they be? They don't need to be. That's not their job. But so they don't really know the technicalities of it. That's the stuff that they think, why does it not sound clearer? And A, the answer is usually twofold. A, the plugins these days are unbelievable, and I've got every one of them, and every one of them does slightly different things, and they're all amazing. But they can't work miracles yet, and the clients sort of expect that. And also the other answer is, you didn't give me enough time to go that deep. So you've given me 8 hours from AAF, which I've got to sort out and takes an hour, 7 hours left, including the layback, 6 hours left, to mix everything and get it all done. And you expect me to spend 5 hours on the tidy up? There's no time for it.
Yeah.
So also you could get it to that level with some of these plugins, but there's just no time. Nobody books any time for it anymore. It's all like, well, you just press a button, don't you? You just press clean and it goes, well, no.
Yeah. I suppose you don't have a choice either, right?
There's no choice. Yeah. I mean, this doesn't happen so much on, I would guess, on dramas and stuff, because these guys get more time to do it, quite rightly, and that's why they sound amazing. But we're getting less and less time to do these kind of the telly stuff I do, with more and more fantastic tools, but less and less time to use them.
Yeah, yeah. And if you said you needed more time, someone else would pop up and say, I can do it for faster than that, right, with a plugin. So
I guess eventually that would happen. I mean, most of the time I just can't do it in the time, so I'll work extra and just don't charge the client. I think we all do a bit of that, don't we? But that can get longer and longer, and there has to be a point where you say, right, I can't do it in that time, and then you have to hope they don't go, well, we'll go to John down the road, he's got this stuff and he'll do it.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a difficult one to pull off. I love having all these tools and I use them all, but that's usually my time I'm eating into.
Yeah.
The client isn't paying for it.
I mean, it's so tempting for the client to cut corners and save money, right, with these tools. This is the main potential issue of them, I think.
Well, we'll fix it in post. It's never become more of a phrase at the moment, because they know all about it. Clients who even technically aren't technically minded at all know that there are plugins that make things cleaner now. So, you know, should we move the mic? Should we do this? Well, don't worry. They've got plugins that do that. There you go.
Yeah.
And of course, it's not always that simple.
I return you to my opening statement. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's... Shay, what about you? What's your...
Oh, well, something we can probably agree on. I mean, I wouldn't say that I can't live without it, but it certainly makes life a whole lot easier when I have it, and that's the Neve 1073 mic pre, which I use on practically every single vocal that I record with clients. It just takes the work out of the mixing stage, to be honest, because you've already got that lovely canvas of those kind of rich sounding vocals from the beginning, right? And so I'd rather use something like that and not have to spend so much time EQing and trying to get that sound out of a vocal in the mixing stage. But yeah, so I absolutely love that, along with the Neumann U87 mic as well, which I bought, and I'm definitely getting my money's worth from it. So, but yeah.
that's okay. I mean, so not everyone has tried. I mean, most people have heard of a 1073, but not everyone's tried one. And you have to use these things to really understand what they do. So how would you describe the effect of a 1073 compared to like a good quality interface preamp?
I mean, just sort of that fatness and warmth, to be honest, that it gives the vocals, that sort of texture that the Neve is really known for anyway. Some people use the BAE as well. I've used both, but I would tend to go with the Neve just purely for the brand reasons. But yeah, it just gives that... we're used to hearing things like the Neve as well in records. So it gives that kind of familiarity as well. And it just sounds way more polished and finished and sort of luscious. That's what I would say to describe it. Have you got one?
Mate, well, no, you're listening to me through a 1073 right now, but mine is a BAE. So it's and I think the superior one because it's well, it's not actually. What it is that the BAEs are replicas of the 70s designs. A modern Neve is put together using, apart from they do still do reissue of the old stuff, but the regular Neve stuff is done using modern techniques, which there's nothing wrong with, but I did consider at the time the fact that this, if it develops a problem, can be fixed by a human with a soldering iron and some knowledge, whereas anything that involves, you know, surface mount or anything like that, or any kind of, you know, those oh-so-efficient techniques, they're more difficult to work on. Mine's a two-channel unit. It's not totally identical to the Neve 73 because it hasn't got the third gain stage, so it doesn't do 85 dB of gain. It does 72 or something, but the 72 dB it does is correct up until that amount of gain, and then there's a difference. But yeah, whatever. But I've got the version with the high pass filter, which is surprisingly expensive. I mean, the whole unit's surprisingly expensive, but and it's like a high pass filter that much. But it's inductor based. It's like it was done in the old days, and it's very cool. Actually, I did a thing checking out what it does, running it through fuzz measure, and it's quite nice to see. Actually, you can like generate traces of your hardware and stuff, and it's a cool thing to do. But what I found is that it's something that really, really works. I'm not that aware of while it's there, but if I take it away, I know straight away.
Yeah.
And like, I've had people write in based on kind of like what my voice sounds like in this setup that I'm using now, asking what it is, which I take as being a good sign. That it's if you're interested enough to ask, then you must think it sounds good. It's an Beyer M201, which I totally rate. I really, really like this microphone. Into this, I've run this into the preamps in my Red 4 Pre, and it sounds fine, but it's like, nah. It's lost the thing.
There's something missing.
It really has. Yeah. Now, you're talking about using a U87, which is kind of like that combination. Well, I mean, we should probably talk about that later, because if that's not on your list, it should be. So I'm going to hold off that. But that's a real combination, that is. So, yeah. Assuming we're going to come back to that, I'm going to leave that right there. And then this is why I'm not having my 1073 as a piece of gear that I can't live without, because you've spoken about yours, so I'm going to have to think of something else.
The Production Expert Podcast is made possible using Source Connect Now from Source Elements, the free way to record high-quality audio over the internet. Need to record an interview or a podcast like this one remotely? With Source Connect Now, you can. Using a Chrome browser, you'll get ISDN equivalent quality audio without the need to install any additional software. Register for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
I'm going to keep stuff really practical for the time being, which is a bit monotonous of me, to be honest.
It's more of a preference, isn't it? Something like a preamble.
But something that, you know, I can get by without most things, to be honest. I mean, there are things that I like and they're nice to have, but very few of them can I like, oh no, that's a showstopper. But if you're looking at it in the long term, I'm going to say my sit-stand desk.
I've got that as mine.
Oh, really?
Okay, I'm not going to say that. So in that case,
No, sit.
I think it's funny that you've both got the same.
Okay, all right. My sit-stand desk.
Because we're both old.
What it is one of these things that mine is kind of cobbled together, but it's not one of these things you plonk on top of your table and lift up and down. It's motorized up down, very sturdy thing. And the thing that I like about the way I've got mine set up, there's something about this on the blog somewhere. There's like a video of me standing in my old house. I was set up in this spare bedroom, and it looks like a spare bedroom. It really does. It's hilarious. I wasn't in that house that long. But I'm there motoring up and down going, check this out. And what I've done, which is really nice, is that I've got the speakers on desk-mounted stands, so they move with the desk, so they stay at the right height relative to me. And the other thing is I've got a rack sleeve, a 4U rack sleeve, which is bolted into the underside of the tabletop so that also moves with the desk as it moves up and down. So I just reach down to my left and I can get to the monitor control for my audio interface, and it's there whether I'm sitting or standing, and I'm at the right height relative to my speakers whether I'm sitting or standing. The thing that does change is that if running sonar works in the room, but you know, you can set up two different profiles so you can sort it out because it is surprisingly different, you know. But okay, that's the practical stuff. What it is, there isn't a downside to it, but the upside is, of course, that I'm standing. I much prefer to stand. But I do find that, considering that I just press a button to raise or lower it, I actually don't. I either have standing days or sitting days. Some mornings I go,
that's interesting. I put it down.
Yeah, and I put it down and it will stay there for the rest of the day. I don't up and down through the day or anything like that. That's changed slightly because of another addition, which is another of my piece of gear I can't live without. So I'll keep away from that for now. But this whole thing of standing, it's a different relationship with what you're doing. And I really like it just because it's more active. When mixing, I've always liked mixing standing up.
Oh, that's interesting.
I can't
mix standing up. I can't do it.
No, I really like
it. It just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, the only time I stand up is to do the dance test on songs that I've written.
Okay.
To be honest, I'm just like, can I dance to this? I'm like, yeah, I can dance to this. But other
now that's a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. And at the other times, I just sit on the sofa. I suppose I can't live without my sofa. I don't always sit at it, but sometimes I just don't want to sit at the desk if it's something that doesn't require.
We're going to have stuff to talk about in a bit because that may come back. But the thing with mixing and standing is I think it comes back to mixing live sound. And you mix live sound standing up. I mean, I know people do sit, but I just think it's wrong. You shouldn't sit when you're mixing live sound. And it sort of goes back to, you know, my first experience of mixing live sound was on big old analog consoles, big Midases and stuff. And you couldn't sit down for long because if you needed to reach, you need to stand up to reach, you know, a deep desk
top somewhere.
It's not going to happen. But it's a better relationship with what you're doing. It's more active. It's more engaged. It's everything about it's better. I worked for quite a long time on a D control, and I really did not like the fact that that's a really substantial piece of gear, and it's so low. And I always found myself, if I was doing proper mix and getting into what I was doing, I'd stand and I'd end up with quite a bad back because I was leaning over the damn thing so much.
Yeah.
I've seen some producers, they have a chair where they're kind of kneeling and it's supposed to be really good for your back. So you're sort of sitting, but with your knees facing
Yeah, I know the ones. I tried that. It didn't help me.
Did it not?
But it depends on your back problem, to be honest with you.
You see, I don't have a bad back, which is something that a lot of people who've done a lot of live work don't often get to say, to be honest, but I seem to get away with it.
No, that's the only reason I've got a sit-stand desk is for that.
I did it because I was concerned about just being sedentary the whole time.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things. I don't have an Apple Watch. I don't pore over my pedometer on my phone. But you do see this stuff. And days when you're sitting all day and you think, okay, I didn't reach 1,000 steps. And it's like, you do that too often, then kind of that's a really, really bad thing that you're doing. So, you know.
So how many hours do you spend standing mixing? All day you spend standing. That's incredible.
I couldn't do it all day.
I couldn't do that. I'm way too lazy.
No.
Well, what it is you go to bed tired.
Yeah, but that's nice. I like to be physically tired. Yeah, helps.
Unless I'm not using it, but we'll come back to that later. So yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, they're so popular these days, and they should be. My top recommendation is get the foam pad. Have you got one of those, Graham? A foam pad to stand on.
Oh yes, to stand on. Yeah, I do. I do. Yeah, it's next to me now.
Because I got that, and I thought I don't need that, and then I tried it, and I went actually.
Yeah. My other top recommendation for a sit-stand desk, I know it's way more expensive, but is like you say, get the motorised one. Because my wife's got one that you just wind up and down, and now she doesn't use it because it's just like, I can't be bothered. And you just can't be bothered doing it because it takes a while, so you just don't do it. Whereas to press a button.
Yeah, I'm surprised that I use the button as little as I do, because it's just one of those things. But I thought it'd be flimsy. And the one I've got absolutely isn't. I mean, it's really good. And I do like a bit of a wobble test on it. But like, you know, with quite a lot of gear on it.
I'm the same.
I've used it in the past as a plasterboard lift.
Oh.
Yeah, really?
You know what I mean? Those things for offering up the... Yeah, no, totally. With some boxes on top. And it's good. It worked.
It's good quality. Nice.
It's funny though, isn't it, that we both have a sit-stand desk, but we use it very, very differently. I wouldn't use mine anything like you. I don't do that at all, the way you work.
So how long do you stand for with yours?
I find standing hurts my back more than sitting, but alternating between them is what gets me through the day. So okay. I'll sit and do as much work as I can sitting down because I can't mix. And as I say, I don't track late as I go, I mix as I go. And I just can't, it doesn't feel right standing up. I can do it, but everything feels wrong. It's like suddenly playing the guitar left-handed. You know what the chords should be, but you can't make them work.
Right.
It's really odd. So then when I'm doing my music pre-mix, because when mine raises, my speakers don't raise, but I use my ceiling Atmos speakers and I switch to that so it comes out of there and I can do a music edit with that fine. Da-da-da, music mix, music edit, and then I'll put it back down and go back to the dialogues. Then that's usually my day. So up for the music edit and down for everything else.
So your body's giving you a time limit on doing any one thing. So by mixing
And also I have three sit settings and one stand setting. So the stand setting is obviously when I stand up. Yeah. Three sit settings are only slightly different, but they're enough that they make me move my back slightly and it really helps me get through the day.
That's really interesting.
One, two and three just move between one and three, there's maybe an inch. So they go an inch, a half an inch up and down. And it just that slight change is enough to force me to sit differently. And I don't really have many back problems since I've started using it so much now. It's
don't
really
say that,
good.
Your back's listening.
Yeah, no, I know, and I've still got back problems, but this does help me.
Yeah, sure.
When I had no option before, oh, awful. So yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, it's way healthier way of working, isn't it, to be honest? I think it's cool.
So are you
I have done that. Oh, who?
Sorry, Ashay, are you a sitter?
I am. I just feel like, because I like to be in my own world and be comfortable, and I drink loads of tea as well. So I just feel like standing, I wouldn't be able to concentrate. I just like sitting down warm with a cup of tea and just focusing on something. You know, that's how I tend to work. And then obviously I've got the gym across the road, so there's no excuse. So I just go to the gym for like an hour or something in the evening.
That's what I should do.
Yeah. I have to force myself. But yeah. Yeah, it's important to move your body, you know, otherwise you just sit down all day and it's very unhealthy. But yeah, I've got another one from Eli Kranzberg, which is really a very practical one as well, which I think for these days is important. And that's Logic Pro, obviously, or any type of DAW. Can we really sort of create any type of music without one?
I was thinking that's not going to help my back at all.
Okay. Logic Pro backstrap. Haven't got that.
Yeah, absolutely. Without a DAW we can't live with, yeah. I didn't say that. That's kind of I think you've got a point there though.
That came from Eli and a couple of other people, so I did a test on Instagram.
I so can live without Logic Pro, I'm just putting that out there, but you know.
Yeah, I can live easily. I do live without Logic Pro. I do. But not without Pro Tools, yeah.
And it's that's one of those things actually of just kind of like we take that so for granted. And it's one of those things that you only really realise how comfortable you are in when it's taken away. That's more like playing guitar left-handed, right?
Yes. I mean, it's yes, like yes. Yeah, if you put me on Logic Pro and said you had to do it, I mean, I literally wouldn't even know how to boot it up. So, yeah, I've never seen it. I've never seen a frame of it. I don't know what it looks like. So, I'd be really stuck.
No, I'm more familiar with it than that. But, I mean, it's like...
No, I'm not.
I sort of... I can do basic stuff in Logic, in Studio One, in Reaper, in all of those things. But it almost immediately, I just fall out of my comfort zone. And I just kind of like, I don't really... it's all that depth of knowledge behind it that you don't think about while you're doing it, because you can just do it straight away. And it's only when it's taken away you realise, oh, wow, you know, I am very much stuck in one way of working.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's because you guys are musicians. All the musician friends I know Logic to some extent, if not more than Pro Tools.
Oh, no, it's because I had to teach it. So I was honestly... Oh. That's a real case of fraud, that is.
you guys do seem to flit around between them more than, whereas in my world it's Pro Tools or nothing.
If I
didn't use Pro Tools, I would not get a single gig. I don't know a single post house for the work that I do that doesn't use Pro Tools.
I mean, Pro Tools have always been the best for audio, to be honest. I think everyone's trying to catch up, but Pro Tools remains incredibly good with audio. And that was tempting for me as well when I used to just do vocals purely in Pro Tools and then move everything to Logic. But, you know, I just do it in Logic now. But I've my brother, he doesn't do this professionally, but he basically works in a pure analog setup and so puts everything on tape. And he's asked me to master his album, but because he makes sort of Beatles sounding 60s music, it kind of works for him, and he doesn't have a DAW.
He's very committed.
I'm trying to convince him to get Pro Tools at least, because I think he could really improve his music just by getting Pro Tools. He's very good, but yeah, he has to keep doing. So he's got piano and he'll say, oh, I don't like that part, I'm going to redo it. And I'm just saying, can you this is ridiculous. You know, if you had a DAW, just Pro Tools, you could just put that's a good recording and just edit it in there. But he seems to want to do everything purely analog, and I just think he's missing a trick there personally.
I admire what he's doing, although I wouldn't do it myself. I have done that, and I've recorded back in the days when you use tape because there wasn't really an alternative. I mean, I was quite early on the whole computer stuff, and I used to get people coming to me getting me to just do basic stereo edits, just because they'd got, you know, I mean, I remember a guy who was doing some stuff. He had a beautifully recorded string quartet thing. He was a composer, and he'd come to me and he had, you know, multiple takes, and he wanted this bit of this one and that bit of that one and that bit of the other one. But and this kind of stuff that to do not in a computer was possible, but risky and not easy. And it's just kind of the lack of consequences, just being able to pull this whole stuff together. And I mean, it was one of those things that was just kind of like, yeah, no, this is the way this stuff should be done. It reminds me a bit of there was a film that a Cornish filmmaker made called Bait. Was it last year? No, it was a year before, I think. It was critics loved it, and it was all shot on like clockwork black and white film cameras.
Wow.
What they call Bolexes, I think they're called. If I've got that wrong, apologies. I'm not a camera guy. But anyway, and the compromises that brought to the workflow. I mean, it looked very, very black and white film grainy. I mean, it had a look that was very distinctive that a lot of people who are into film absolutely loved, in much the same way that a lot of people who are kind of into audio love the whole tape thing. You know, there's a parallel there. But these things are incredibly noisy. So that had ramifications on what happened on the audio side of stuff, because, you know, you had this thing happening throughout every take. Also, I forget how long the longest wind you could have on these things, but it wasn't like, it was like 20 seconds or something. I mean, it was like really, really short. Again, don't correct me if I'm wrong on that. But, you know, and it's like, fine, you can have that, but it's really going to knock everything else, you know, and if you're prepared to pay the price, and that's what your brother's doing, is kind of
absolutely.
You can do that, and he should, if that's what he wants to do. I'm totally down with that, but it does affect stuff. And if it's like, oh, that's perfect apart from that little thing, well, you either go again or you live with it, because, you know, some stuff's just not fixable. I can remember back in the old having a pop on a mic and waiting for it with your hand on the low shelf and then whacking it down and whacking it back up again just to pull this bump out, because that's crazy, how you did it, you know?
Mm.
I mean...
It seems crazy now.
It makes me sound really old. Good grief. Okay. Anyway, shall we move on? Talk about
Let's
something that isn't about how old I am.
Yeah.
RSPE Audio Solutions. Design, sell, and install professional audio and video equipment. Their team are available by phone, live chat, or email to receive and process orders. They have everything you need to build or upgrade your home studio to ensure you can continue to work from home. If there is anything they can do to help, reach out or shop online at rspeaudio.com.
Okay, so Graham, what about you? Let's have another one.
Other thing I now couldn't live without, depending on what I'm mixing, but if, when I'm mixing, the more channels I have to mix, my Focusrite R1 controller becomes invaluable. In Atmos, obviously there's other controllers, but what I mean is I couldn't live without a controller. Mine just happens to be the R1 controller because that goes with my Red 16 line.
Yeah.
How on earth? Every now and then I wonder how. I do something on it and I go, how would I have done that if I didn't have it?
Okay, so run us through some example things. We're not talking about turning it up and turning it down here necessarily.
No. Once it's going, I never touch it. So yeah, sure.
So what is it that you're doing with this?
Monitoring on it more than anything. So what, you know, I'll be, wonder what's coming out the ceilings now and nothing else. There we go. Two button pushes done. One button push really.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there we go. I can, rather than having to somehow go into the renderer, which is awful for it, and trying to, because you can't solo in the renderer, so you have to mute all the others, and it's just,
I tell you what, that's mess. Never occurred to me, but no, I've never seen a solo.
It's a mess. That's why I ended up with an R1, because I started doing Atmos, and I was like, how do I? I just want to solo the set. Oh, I have to mute all the others. That's really unuseful.
Yeah,
there was no quick. And also, if you've got the renderer software hidden somewhere, if you have, then you know you don't want to be farting about with your mouse all the time. So it's just on right in front of me, soloing out things, muting things. Also does really nice solo modes that I sometimes use, like solo to center. So no matter where it is in the thing, it'll always solo to the center. It's good for
aspects.
So you don't have to solo it in the back right if that's where it is. It'll solo to the center so you can hear it better to EQ it or do whatever.
So you can solo in place or...
Yeah, solo in place, solo in center.
Or whatever it'd be, yeah.
Yeah, and there's other ones I can't even remember. I only use those two. But also the input thing, so I can have my library renders come in and I can just quickly click them and hear them straight away. I know you can do it, again, you can do this on the renderer, but you have to mouse over to it, find it, click it down, click it back, and you can do it. I mean, there's nothing you can't do without these, but it's just the speed it makes you work at, and it's so quick to go 5171. Oh, that's great. Back to here we go. Off we go. Mute that. Solo this. Sometimes I want to solo just the center to make sure. Is that definitely? Yeah. There we go. Or have I accidentally sent that reverb to the back? I'll solo the backs. Oh no, I've not. Or whatever. You know, it's great for that. Again, the less channels you work in, the less. I mean, I don't go, when I'm in stereo, I don't go, I wonder what's on the left. I never. But when you're in Atmos, and the more you go up, the fold down options of it, the routing options within it.
That can get complicated. You know,
does sound like a useful box.
It's just, it is just brilliant. I just love it. So my Red 16 line used to be on my desk in front of me, but now it's hidden away in a rack. Not in Iraq. That would be crazy. That would be a long cable.
That really would.
But it's hidden away, and I don't see it ever. I don't need to see it. It's great.
Excellent.
So I love that.
Okay. Right. So I think we've run pretty long. We could keep doing this actually, because I know we've got a few that we haven't covered, but we should really move on to Find of the Week.
I think so. Graham, you sound keen to tell us your find.
It's because last time we did this, I didn't really have one and I'd forgotten about it, and I had to think of something really quick. So this time, I actually thought
You've
about
got
it.
Something.
And it's from a company called Supperware, and it's a software called Bridgehead, and it's basically a head tracking device. Now that Atmos supports it, and Dolby recommend this one as the one you should get at the moment. And it just happens, he says on his website, if you happen to have Beyer Dynamic DT990 Pros, which I do, they'll fit exactly in. You just you unclip the thing and it sits underneath, so you don't even need to tie it on, it just sits there. Just happened to be lucky that I had the exact earphones that sort of work perfectly with it. And it's brilliant. So I mostly mix Atmos in the speakers, but I've always got it routed to my headphones binaurally, and I can have a quick listen, and the head tracking just... before, and you could listen before in binaural, but now with head tracking, it's just fantastic. You can just turn around and listen to what's gone where, and it's brilliant. And it wasn't massively expensive, so I was very happy with that.
Yeah.
Use it all the time now.
That's really, really handy. Have you tried the NX plugins?
Yes.
What did you think of those?
Should we not talk about that?
I think you just answered the question. No, we're moving on.
Well, there we go. Moving swiftly on.
Your silence speaks for itself.
Indeed. Julian.
Right. Okay. So this is very new, but I have... after my very, very old MacBook Pro broke... rather inconveniently, a couple of months ago, I finally bit the bullet and I bought a new M2 MacBook Pro, which is a lovely machine. I'm kind of crossfading it with my studio machine, which is an old Mac Mini, which is fine, you know, for most of the stuff that I'm doing. Honestly, it's okay, and it's quite nice to keep your old machine so you can go, well, that's already a dreadful mess, so I'm going to keep this pristine. So like, oh, I should install and test this free plugin. It's like, not on the new one. No. So that kind of stuff, you know. But there's practical things that sort of come with it. So, for example, I mean, you're mentioning your sofa in the studio, Cher. I mean, yeah, yes. I've got a sofa in my studio, and I'm finding myself on it quite often these days because it's nice to go, no, I'll tell you what, lad, a little bit of time. You know? The plan is to crossfade and eventually to shunt out the Mini. And I'm looking at the whole clamshell running the MacBook Pro as a studio machine, because the thing I like about the desktop isn't the fact it's a desktop, it's having a proper keyboard with, you know, and a proper mouse and a large screen in front of me that is, you know, and all of that ergonomic stuff.
Yeah.
And run it clamshell, you've got that. Anyway, I bought this CalDigit. Russ has got one, and he's said to me before, oh, you should totally get one of these. And I looked at it and went, how much? And did all that stuff. Black Friday, picked it up for less. There's a new one, the TS4, which is Thunderbolt 4 and blah, blah, blah. I looked at it. It's expensive. And checking this out, this 3, it's fine, actually. It's only Thunderbolt 3. There's nothing only Thunderbolt 3 for me, actually. It's like faster than I need. I don't do 8K video or anything like that.
Yeah.
But the point is, with a single cable, I can connect it to my MacBook Pro and run clamshell. All my drives are hanging off it, all of that stuff. If I want to swap back to my Mini, I just take that Thunderbolt and pop it into the back of my Mini, and I'm there. I can flip-flop between the two machines. None of my drives know anything's changed, anything like that. The only thing that you have to do so far, because I only got it on Sunday, is that you swap between machines and immediately it'll say, aha, you can't use an iLock across two machines. So you have to unplug the iLock and plug it back in again. And if that's as bad as it gets, fine. I've got it front mounted out of my drive caddy, so it's nice and accessible anyway. So it's, you know, if that's as bad as it gets, I'll live with it. But no, it's been brilliant so far. I'm really, really taken with the whole kind of like workflow options of being able to do that stuff.
Fantastic.
So, Ashay, what about you? What's your fun of the week?
Yeah, I mean, I tested out the Wave Silk Vocal plugin. So it's a smart EQ and dynamic plugin for vocals, which basically has, I think it's 3 dials for EQ, low, mids and highs. And then you've got a dynamic slider, which is basically a compressor, and a mix dial. But annoyingly, you can't really go under the hood and adjust any of the settings. So there's not really a huge amount you can do with it, but it is quite good. It does have a live version. So it's good for sort of quick vocal processing, if you want sort of low latency, getting live vocals to sound brighter, more upfront, all of that, it does quite well. And also things like tracking and comping vocals, where you don't want to sort of spend too much CPU power or time sort of, you know, getting a good vocal chain. So it's good for that. But yeah, I think it sounds a little too harsh to sort of use in a final mix.
Okay, so it does one thing, which is fine, but you're not sure you like the one thing it does.
I mean, I like it for things like, I can see how it would be good with live, because it's very quick. You get a sort of upfront compressed vocal that's sort of brighter.
You say for live, so what, it runs on one of those Wave server boxes or something, is that?
I assume so, yeah. So that's quite good. And obviously the CPU will be much less, and things like tracking and comping is quite handy, because sometimes when you're comping vocals as well, you want to get a quick sort of semi-finished sound to really, you know, choose which takes you're going to do. So I think it would be good with that. But yeah, it is a little too harsh, and because you can't really go under the hood with it, you can't really adjust it. So
one person's harsh is probably another person's I don't know really, but it's so it's Silk, and you think it sounds harsh. There's
well, it's called Silk. It's called it's called Silk, but
should we call it Hessian? What, I mean, where are we going with this? So I have a question, which is, and this is putting you on the spot, I know, but I really liked Sonok's Voca. I know you checked that out.
I did.
Does it do the same thing?
Yeah. See, I actually, if I remember rightly, I quite like the sound of that. So this was better than this per se. I'm not sure what the CPU is like with Sonok's Voca. And if it had a live option, I don't think it does have a live option.
I'm putting you on the spot. So, you can check them out side by side and get back to me.
Yeah, I need to check them out. Okay. But
all right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's all we've got time for this week. But thank you to Shea. Thank you to Graham. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Production Expert Podcast.